Welcome to the Aha Moment with
Erin Backus
and Irene Barber, where we talk to professionals in horticultural therapy and related fields, sharing their journeys of discovering the powerful benefits of working with plants. Sit back and enjoy some inspirational stories accompanied with laughter and refreshments. Hello, hello. It is the Aha Moment, and my name is Erin Backus, and I have, of course, my wonderful co-host with me this evening, Irene Barber.
Hello, everybody. Nice to have you all back for our autumnal session.
And my bones say it definitely is fall time, so. Mm-hmm. But our guest tonight is in warm and probably sunny Florida. Lee Deal, welcome.
Thank you. It was warm and sunny here today.
Meanwhile,
we always like to establish the weather.
Just so our listeners know that, like, Irene and I are stuck in the cold Northeast, and most people we interview are not. But the fall colors here are just gorgeous. And so I really love the Northeast in the fall. I get to go apple picking. Mm-hmm. Did that the other day. And the color is amazing.
Yep. Yep.
But
yeah, you don't get that in Florida.
We don't. We have a couple of plants that change color, but it's nothing like, you know, anywhere more north. So we do miss that for sure. Especially me being a Midwestern girl.
Yes, definitely.
So you were outside of Boston growing up, but then you are a Midwestern girl in general.
Yeah, my family moved out of the Boston area when I was probably about 10, and we moved to the Chicago area. So that's really where I feel like I grew up.
Yeah. Your roots.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let me just give you the proper introduction. Lee Deal, we're very honored to have her tonight. She is the Director of Therapeutic Horticulture at the Wilmot Botanical Gardens and lecturer in the environmental horticulture. She is a licensed landscape architect, like I said before, a master gardener, and also a professional registered HTM. Lee manages and teaches an undergraduate certificate program in horticultural therapy at the University of Florida, conducts research projects, and runs therapeutic horticulture programming for diverse populations, where she coordinates clients, volunteers, and students. She has given lectures, workshops, and trainings on horticultural therapy, healing gardens, and related topics to many groups in the U.S. and abroad. Lee began her work in horticultural therapy in Chicago in 1993, where she started up a therapeutic and pre-vocational program for individuals with physical and developmental disabilities at, I have no idea how to say that.
Misericordia Home.
Misericordia Home. Thanks, Lee. Irene, off to you, you know.
Yeah. I have to ask, what is the origin of that name of the assisted living? Or I'm sorry, not assisted living, the home for developmental disabilities.
Yeah, Misericordia means Heart of Mercy, and the facility, which is an amazing place, is run by an order of nuns, the Sisters of Mercy. So it is a really beautiful place right on the edge of Chicago, quite large, but they do an amazing job. And not only have I worked there, but I have a little brother that lives there as well. So I'm familiar with it from many angles.
Oh, okay. And so was that, now you... Wow, what a great segue. Was that a means for you to become inspired about horticultural therapy, is having your brother there as well?
You know, absolutely, but I don't think I really realized it at the time. I think my little brother, he's just 3 years younger than I am, and he had a traumatic brain injury when he was almost just about 2 years old. Mm-hmm. And so he has grown up going through the special education system and me right along there with him, you know, and all the different kinds of activities and schools he went to. And so I was always very interested in special education and very comfortable with people of all different backgrounds and needs and, you know, challenges and that sort of thing. And so definitely, I think that was brewing in the background as I was thinking about what I was going to do when I grew up and with my life.
Yeah, 1993, you were probably what, 17?
Oh, I wish. Yeah. Just a little bit older.
Just a little bit older. So, you know, when we have our guests here, we also like to just talk about their journey of becoming a horticultural therapist. And it can be from the day in which maybe you first gardened and there's something clicked, or maybe it was a traumatic experience that, you know, inspired, or the light bulb came on for you that you started to have a relationship with gardening. But everybody has a different story. And so we just were interested in your story, Lee, and the fact that your bio, you have a very exemplary bio, by the way. It's beautiful. The amount of work you've achieved in such a short amount of time. But so when was the starting point? And maybe it was several of them.
And I think that's just it, Irene. I think that I love the title of this podcast, The Aha Moment. But I think I had a series of tiny little aha moments that kind of brought me, you know, guided me, because I do have a very non-traditional career given my educational background.
Right.
And, you know, certainly one of those influences was growing up with my little brother and all the things that I experienced because of that. But I also, from a pretty young age, knew that I wanted to design spaces. My father actually saved a bunch of pictures of playground equipment that I used to design, because I thought it would be so cool to play on. So, like, you know, big candy cane structures with slides and ladders shooting out of them all over the place. And so for me, that concept seemed to be that was about architecture and going to architecture.
Right.
So I kind of recognized, even when I was in high school, I went through, did drafting courses, that I wanted to be an architect.
Wow.
So I did. I ended up going to architecture school. I actually did 2 years in kind of environmental design. And then I transferred to a school where I could get an professional architecture degree. And just to back up a little bit, I think that when I was trying to decide what type of a career to have, you know, I'd had this amazing experience being familiar with the special ed system. And I knew I wanted to be a designer of some type, but I couldn't decide which to do. And I think I finally realized that, you know, I could always volunteer my time in special ed sort of things, but I could probably never find anybody let me volunteer in architecture. So I went to architecture school, and it was toward the end, it was a 5-year program, and it was toward the end of that program that I heard about landscape architecture. And it amazes me that I didn't know about it from day one. But we had a special professor come in and do a kind of a guest design studio, and she was a landscape architect. And that was a big aha moment for me, because I thought, you know, that's the kind of design I really want to do. It's with, you know, using nature and plants and these things that are living and growing and changing, and the kinds of experiences I could design for people with those, with plants and nature kind of as the medium to do that. So that's that was a big one for me. And I finished the architecture degree and then went right in to get my master's degree in landscape architecture, because I was just so excited about that. That kind of pushed me in that path.
So your architecture program didn't actually have any LA classes, but this one guest speaker came, and who was in LA.
I mean, it's crazy to think that there wasn't more of a relationship, but they didn't have a landscape architecture program at that school. So perhaps that was why.
Can you maybe give a little insight as to why you appreciated working with plants? Forget about horticultural therapy right now, but just your desire of working with the landscape architecture world with living plants rather than with buildings and civil engineering materials, and that was your palette, essentially. How did you feel like one palette was better than the other?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I didn't really do any gardening growing up. Neither of my parents gardened. You know, there, we might have the odd tomato plant growing, you know, in a pot somewhere, but that was just not part of my childhood. And actually, as you were asking that question, I have another aha moment going on in my head right now, and I'm realizing that, for me, that relationship with plants and nature were about being in them, not growing them, if that makes any sense. And I mentioned that my younger childhood was in the Boston area. We lived on a dead end street. We were the last house on that dead end street. And past, you know, where the road ended was this big, these big woods with all sorts of crazy things, at least as a kid, to discover in there. And so we would spend hours and hours. And of course, our parents, you know, they weren't helicopter parents. They just said, make sure you're home when the streetlights come on. And so we would spend hours out there just creating these experiences and creating stories. And so that was a really important part of my childhood, being outside, being in a natural environment, and really experiencing.
You had the nature playground at your foot right there at your front door or back door, whatever access you had, but yet, and you weren't afraid. And I that's another thing that we've talked to from other people in urban environments, how nature can be somewhat scary. How did you, like, did you have another friend or maybe somebody in your life try to introduce nature to you as an exciting element? Like you mentioned your dad a little bit.
Yeah, I don't. Well, first of all, the street that we lived on was full of kids. So, I mean, there were families and families and families, which, I mean, it was wonderful.
So it was by default, essentially.
Exactly. So I think we were all out there together. We were, and, you know, different ages and that sort of thing. So maybe the bigger kids were watching us. I don't know. It certainly didn't feel like it. But I think that maybe I would have felt a little of that fear if I'd been out there in the woods all by myself, but because there were always other people around, where they were my siblings or they were just neighbors, we were out there together, creating the stories together, I think.
And that's a really great point, is that there was community involved in that natural setting rather than feeling isolated in that natural setting. And so it gave you more of a purpose and more of a sense of belonging to that
space. Absolutely. And I think even more than that as well, there was this whole group of people that changed every day, you know, who was available to play that day outside. But that we, I think, as a group were more creative about the things we were discovering and doing and imagining in those woods, because it wasn't just me coming up with the stories. It was, you know, that group that was changing all the time. So I do feel like that creativity and the imagining and the creating stories to go along with these little natural discoveries was a really important part of that.
Yeah. And then moving forward into your career as a landscape architect, where were you at the time of your life that you started to come across hort therapy itself?
So I would say that really started to come together when I went into my master's program in landscape architecture. And let me add one more thing. I think that this is probably a significant part of my development in terms of my relationship with nature. When we moved away from Boston, my family moved to Chicago. We moved into a beautiful house that actually sat on a golf course. So it was on the ninth fairway of a golf course, and, you know, a pretty natural golf course other than the fairways, but beautiful pond in front of us and lots of trees. And so that was a very different, beautiful, but a very different relationship with nature. It was kind of that passive beauty of sitting on our deck and looking out at this gorgeous view. We weren't supposed to go on the golf course. We couldn't really, you know, interact. Although I will tell you that when I was a teenager at night, there were times I was out on that golf course.
Of course. Of course.
But so I think those two things together, the very active part of nature and then the important passive part of nature, that you know, when you're a teenager and older, you're starting to think about stress and trying to find ways to reduce that stress. And so I think that second relationship with nature really played that part. So, but to get back to your question, I think that when I was in landscape architecture school, really realizing how to manipulate plants and spatial qualities to create these experiences for people, then that, and, you know, then just having that whole background with my little brother and all the places he'd gone to school, I think it just kind of started to come together as, well, you know, we can all have these great experiences in nature, but, you know, is there maybe some healing component to that as well? Is it something that can create some possibilities for somebody that might not have had them otherwise? My little brother uses a wheelchair. So the part of the home that he lives in, other boys at that time, there were boys and girls that are now all adults, were also using wheelchairs. And, you know, they never got to sit on the grass. It was hard for them to get out and, you know, kind of have that very physical experience with nature that a lot of us did growing up. So I think those were the ideas that were kind of starting to come together for me.
And the fact that I like how you shared the difference of being actively engaged from a childhood nature connection, but then as you were going through adolescence and the stress, you had more of a chance to see it as a retreat or as a sanctuary or something quiet and calming. So when in the horticultural therapy, so I guess where I'm trying to lead to is when you're in your degree and you're gathering your experiences with your brother, is there somebody who says, Lee, did you know about horticultural therapy? Or did you seek it out somehow through random searches, et cetera?
That's a good question. And Google so
search.
So I did not know about horticultural therapy. I'd never heard that term. I finished up my master's degree in landscape architecture. I knew I wanted to move back to Chicago where my family was, and my both my brothers and my dad were there. And so I wrote a letter because I don't even think we had email. Oh, I'm sure we had email then. But I wrote a letter to the director of Misericordia Home, Sister Rosemary. And I said, hey, coming back home, I'm going to be looking for a job, but I want to volunteer. I wasn't asking her for a job. I was saying, I want to volunteer my time doing a community garden or something like that for the residents of Misericordia. I think this would be a really great opportunity for them. And I truly was thinking about this as just something, some volunteer work, a way to spend some more time with my brother. And I got a letter, a real letter in the mail back from her saying, please don't accept a position. Please come work for us full time. We want you to do this for us at Misericordia. And she said the reason was because they were finding a really hard time finding meaningful work for the residents that they had, like my little brother, who had many of them have cerebral palsy or they're using wheelchairs and they're very bright intellectually, but their bodies maybe don't let them do, you know, what they'd like to be able to do. And they wanted to find some meaningful work and activities for those folks. So she thought that this kind of a thing would be perfect for them. And she was absolutely right. She was kind of farther thinking than I was at that time.
And then from there, you kind of taught yourself in some respects on how to try, like you were trialing things out and.
Exactly. It was trial and error. I was learning to grow plants. I mentioned before, I never really learned how to grow plants. You know, I learned about plant identification and all that kind of stuff and, you know, ecological aspects of nature and plants. But so they gave us a classroom. We installed grow lights. We had tables and just in a kind of a dark corner of a building, a classroom building. But the residents loved it. It was, I mean, we made a lot of mistakes, but we were making them together. You know, I didn't go in there like I was an expert. I went in there and said, okay, we're going to figure out how to have some fun and do some cool things. And maybe we can produce some plants to sell to the staff. And so it was at that time that I was actually approached by some people at the Chicago Botanic Garden who were, you know, they knew all about horticultural therapy at that time. They had their early demonstration garden way before the Bueller Enabling Garden. And they said, hey, we're just reaching out to you because, you know, we obviously you're into horticultural therapy. And I said, into what? What was that term?
And what year was that?
That was, let's see. Oh gosh. I want to say that was 1994. Because I believe, if I'm correct, that the Chicago Botanic Garden was hosting the AHTA conference that year. And it might have even been a joint with APGA or something like that. But they asked if I would be interested in getting involved in planning the conference. And I thought, sure. It was a great way to meet people. I got to know some of the people at the Botanic Garden, like Jean Rothard and some other people that were kind of doing these things.
Oh, Barb was after. That's right. Barb was later. Barb Kresge.
And actually, Candace Shoemaker was there at that time as well. She was the director of the education component at the Chicago Botanic Garden. So it was a great time to sort of engage with those folks and kind of learn a little bit more about the profession and, you know, what we could do.
And so did you end up then taking some classes through Chicago Botanic Garden to find your way through horticulture a little more?
Or? You know, I didn't, to be honest with you. I'm not even sure at that time whether there were, I mean, I can't remember when their therapeutic landscape certificate started. I don't think it existed yet then, mm-hmm. but I was so busy with my job. And we actually, about a year after I started there, we got a grant to build a greenhouse specifically mm-hmm. for this horticultural therapy program. And it was truly horticultural therapy. We were creating goals and objectives for individuals. So, you know, as part of their individual treatment plan, every resident at Misericordia has an individualized treatment plan. So mm-hmm. I was really learning a lot just by wow. trial and error and learning yeah. the sort of the assessment side from people at Misericordia and then right. just through trial and error, the horticulture side of things.
Oh my goodness.
That garden still exists today?
It does. There is somebody that's running the program there. I do not believe that that the person right now is a registered horticultural therapist, but I think they do have some background. The greenhouse, believe it or not, was moved to a different location. I think it took them a little while. I mean, on campus, it's a 12-acre campus, I believe. So it took them a little while to get it rebuilt, but I think they have kind of a hydroponic system going on there now. That's really what they're focusing on, which is kind of cool.
So while you're working there and you're having time with your brother, did he actually appreciate doing the gardening with you?
He did. And that was really wonderful. He came and worked with me every day. As a matter of fact, he still works in the program there, their horticultural therapy program, which so I have to, you know, kind of get the scoop every time we talk. So that was amazing. And just, you know, getting to know him in a different way, getting to know his friends. And it was really amazing. That was a hard position to leave, but it was very, very wonderful while I was there.
And so while you were there, when did you actually become an HTM then? What was your process of that?
So at that time, there wasn't an internship requirement or the academic requirements. And so I think the folks after I'd been doing this 2 or 3 years, maybe the folks at the Botanic Garden, and then I think AHTA sort of recommended that I apply. And so I went ahead and applied for registration, and they actually, I think because I'd had this experience and the number of years that I was doing this, said, hey, we're just going to grant you HTM because, you know, you've put so many hours in. I know HTM is not an option anymore, but so that mm-hmm. was a really nice sort of award. mm-hmm, but yeah, mm-hmm. so it was in that because I was actually... Gosh, I think I was only there about 4 years before I left mm-hmm. to go mm-hmm. on to a different, another job.
And I'm just trying to think of like how many HTMs and also what the membership was like of AHTA back then. It's grown a lot in the last few years, but back then I was just curious how big it was.
I don't exactly remember. I think it was probably around the same size, maybe a little bit bigger than it is now. I don't think that there were probably as many professional members, but it kind of was, that was a higher time and then it kind of dipped down. I think it's kind of gone through some cycles. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And so you left Misericordia and you moved, did you have to move to Florida?
You said it. Yes. No, actually we moved to, West Virginia and I accepted a position teaching landscape architecture at West Virginia University. And I was very interested in trying out the academic route. And I also really wanted to kind of flex some of those landscape architecture muscles that I had sort of been put on hold for a little while.
Yeah.
It was really, really hard to leave that position. And there have been many times that I've looked back and thought, was that the right decision? mm-hmm. But I so appreciate the things that I've done since then. And I think having that academic experience at WVU has really put me in the right place to end up here mm-hmm. at University mm-hmm. of Florida, where I was mm-hmm. able to combine both the programming, therapeutic mm-hmm. horticulture programming, with teaching the horticultural therapy certificate program.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, doing it from a university format too, you're working with the community as well as the students. Is that right?
That's right. Yes.
So you're getting best of both worlds, in my opinion, as far as educating more to do horticultural therapy or therapeutic horticulture. And yet you're also doing the community outreach opportunities and you know, just providing that wellness program for the community. So.
Yeah. And that's really true. It's great to be able to do both of those things and then combine them too. So when our students are here in Gainesville, they can come and turn or volunteer or in some cases work in our program. I think that the other thing that's been really nice here at University of Florida is that we work with a lot of different populations based on the funding that we get, or in the last couple of years, I think people have come to know more about what we do. And so I might get a doctor reach out to me from one of the departments. Mm-hmm. We've got a really big health center here saying, you know, to say, hey, I'm kind of interested in doing a small pilot program with my patients. Is that something we can do? So it's been really great for me continuing to learn and grow by working with more and more populations. Mm-hmm. And then it's, of course, a great experience for the students to be able to really get exposure to some different client groups.
Mm-hmm. And so at our conference this year, you and I were talking about a new program that you're offering on campus for students who aren't actually in horticultural therapy. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about how you're also offering horticultural therapy versions of it to other college students?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so proud of this program. It's just been such a pleasure to work with these students. And we realize, as most people know, but especially those that work in, you know, colleges and universities, that college students these days are really struggling with a lot of stress, anxiety, depression, loneliness. This was going on way before COVID, and of course was exacerbated by COVID.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I thought, you know, we do all these therapeutic horticulture programs for these different patient groups, but we're not really doing anything for our own students. And so I started talking to my chair of my department and also the director of the Counseling and Wellness Center here at UF and saying, you know, I've got this idea. I think we should give it a try. We just need a little bit of funding. And so I found a grant that supported this program. And what we did is we started up this program for University of Florida students. Doesn't matter what level, they could be freshmen, they could be postdocs, they could be master's students. And they come to our greenhouse once per week for the semester and participate in therapeutic horticulture activities. We also bring a counselor from the Counseling and Wellness Center who comes and delivers a wellness strategy. So we all work together to determine the wellness strategy, and then we try to match a horticulture activity with that wellness strategy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they're getting horticulture, they're getting some, and you know, the not every wellness strategy works for everybody, but usually within the semester, they're going to learn several that are going to be helpful to them. They get a chance to talk, to kind of create this community of support. And then we're teaching them this new skill, this horticulture skill, as a way to, a couple of our goals are to make them feel more confident in growing plants on their own, and also to recognize the role that plants in nature can play in their journey for personal wellness.
Right.
And this has been a research project. So we have collected data. This is our third semester we're collecting data. And we're really excited that we've found statistically significant decreases in stress and anxiety among the students and statistically significant increases in resilience and academic resilience.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, I mean, and this is a population that can appreciate metaphors.
So
the opportunity to identify nurturing a plant is, you know, nurturing yourself. It's also the steps in which you may nurture other people down the road in your life, but you first need to nurture yourself in that process. So I think the correlation of just nurturing something also gets you out of your head of thinking about the self all the time, and thinking about the thing that you have or the being that you are keeping alive.
Absolutely. I absolutely agree with that. And in that, I think that students start to realize that they have something to offer. You know, when a student is really feeling low, they're depressed, they feel lonely, they're stressed, they start to doubt themselves and their capabilities. And so I think this is one little way that we can help them build back up or remind them about that self-esteem and self-efficacy and that they really can learn new things and, you know, that really are helpful to them. So that's been really great. And just, you know, I think that one of the things that's been so wonderful for me personally is the feedback we're getting from these students. They're so thankful for this program. And it's nothing I'm doing. I'm just putting it together. It's their experiences with each other and being able to see some counselors in a very different environment and being able to learn this new skill that's really bringing them a lot of joy. And it's they're just so thankful. You know, they're carrying their hearts on their sleeves in many ways. And that's been really, it's been recharging for me for sure.
I'm sure you have a hidden agenda to recruit more budding horticulturists too.
Well, maybe.
Did you see how amazing that is? Why don't you just start? You're doing an awesome job. Come to my field, you know?
Exactly, exactly.
You don't need computer software.
Yeah.
That has no rewards. Come on. Anyway. You know, humor has to be a big part of it. So it's, I think, anyways, that's where I'm coming from. Sorry.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I had a closing question and then we have one other question too, but what would, if you had a chance to talk to little Lee, say, maybe not that little, maybe 13-year-old Lee.
All right.
And that person is struggling with hormones. That person is struggling with mom and dad. That person is struggling with teenagers. What would you say as far as like looking into the self and giving herself a little wisdom or boost of confidence?
Oh, Irene, that's a tough question.
Yeah.
This is out of the blue. This is a new question for me, too.
I like to toss it up a little bit.
You know, I think, I'm not sure how I would say it, but I think one of the messages that I would try to get across to that little Lee, and you kind of pinned down that little Lee pretty well, as a preteen and a teenager.
Yeah.
I think I would try to get across the point to be kind to myself and to not judge myself too much and also not to judge the things going on around me too much. You know, that I guess had I known about the concept of mindfulness back then and approaching, you know, ideas and situations with just sort of an open mind and as much non-judgment as possible, again, both for myself and for the situation, I think that would have been very beneficial to me. And, and, you know, also maybe a reminder that just because I think this is the path I want right now, that doesn't necessarily mean my path's not going to switch somewhere else. And that's going to be perfectly okay if that happens. And to just try to be true to myself and to the things that are coming along, because I do think I struggled with that a little bit. I kept thinking, shouldn't I be working in a landscape architecture office somewhere? And found myself judging myself a little bit about that. But I think that what I'm doing now is what I'm supposed to be doing.
And you said that so, I loved it eloquently, and I'm glad I tested it with you. That was brilliant. I don't know. There was just something about when you were talking to us about your childhood, and now it just like fast forward to adulthood. You know, there's so much in between that happens. And so obviously you can't wrap that up in a 20-minute interview session, but I just wanted to see if there was a connection that you could relate to that younger you. So
well, you're giving me another aha moment. All of them.
In our closing, this is something that actually I think you are so versed in, but it's something that we like to ask all of our guests, and Erin is the one who usually gets to ask this question.
Yeah, but I mean, this question doesn't even compare to yours, Irene. I mean, yours was so wholesome and...
yours is practical. It's important.
Mine is very practical, I guess you'd say, and very practical for horticultural therapists like us. When you're doing all these sessions, what is your go-to plant that you like to... use or go to at least type of plant that you like to use?
Oh, that is a great question.
And you can have a different population if you want from one to another. It's up to you.
Well, can I say two plants?
Yeah.
Okay. Because I think I have two plants that I have found over time and across populations that I work with have been really, really wonderful. And one, of course, is probably no surprise. It's succulents, lots and lots mm-hmm. of succulents. And I think because there's such variety and they're so unusual and they have such amazing little details that they've been a really good plant to work with because they draw people in that may not think they're necessarily going to benefit from plants.
Right.
And they also teach patience, of course, because, you know, we know they grow on dinosaur time. So we have to kind of teach that part as well.
I like that. Dinosaur yeah. time.
That's definitely one. But the other one that's been really helpful for us, and part of it is because we're University of Florida, is the coleus plant. And the reason for that is we here at University, and I'm saying we generously because it's not me, but a gentleman, Dr. Dave Clark, who's actually in my department, is responsible for breeding 40, 50 varieties of coleus that are out there in
wow.
and places like that. Because of that, and he's because he feels, you know, wants to support our program, he gives us lots of coleus to work with. And that's such an amazing plant as well. And especially in here in Florida, where we can grow it most of the year, such
yeah.
amazing colors and shapes. And, you know, because it's in the mint family, it's got this amazing square stem that just mm-hmm. blows the top off just about anybody that isn't familiar with square stems. Mm-hmm. And it's so easy to propagate. And there's so many different things we can do with it. So that's been a crowd pleaser from the very beginning. And because it grows so easily, if I'm working with some people that maybe don't have a lot of fine and gross motor skills, they yeah. can plow through a whole lot of coleus and I'm not too concerned about it because I know that it's going to pop right back.
Yeah. Yeah. The stem cutting are very, I'd say forgiving, you
yes.
know, you can keep them in the shade. You can keep them in the part sun, not full sun when they're in the cutting mode. But so that's a really interesting point that you said that they do so well in Florida. I would not have thought that for some reason.
Yeah.
I would
have. Well, and the ones that have been bred here at University of Florida have been bred to thrive in sandy
right.
soils in full sun.
I
so
see.
That's another reason they do so well. Probably some of the earlier varieties or the ones mm-hmm. that have been maybe bred elsewhere may not do quite as well through that.
I want to know that list of those that have been bred down there because that would be really informative.
Yeah, I'll send you a link and you can take a look because they've got a great website that shows some of those.
Oh, that would be a treasure.
That's
a really good point about, you know, tolerance, teaching about tolerance and how you can breed it in yourself.
You are just on point.
I'm liking these metaphors. And I, you know, to be honest, I don't think I ever used the metaphor of tolerance with coleus, but I'm going to do that. Thanks, Irene.
No problem. That's what these sessions are for, Lee. They're just
That's
inspiring
right.
for us. Well, thank you so much, Lee. We really appreciated all of what you shared with us today. And thank you to your brother for giving you the chance to be with him and to share that experience with him. That's pretty, very special.
Thank you. Thank you for saying that. And thank you so much for having me. This has been a lot of fun.
Awesome.
So I appreciate it.
All right.
All right. Good night, everyone. Until next time.
All right. Happy fall.